Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Stars of the Golden Age, a show that highlights the lives of legends from film, music, and the birth of television during Hollywood's Golden Age and the few years surrounding it. I am your host, Erin Carlson. Today, we will be discussing Barbara Stanwyck, the queen of film noir. Barbara Stanwyck was not born into an easy childhood. In fact, she wasn't even born as Barbara Stanwyck. She was born on July 16, 1907, as little baby Ruby Catherine Stevens in Brooklyn, New York. Her parents were Byron and Catherine Stevens, and they already had four children before little Ruby was born, three of which were already adults. The couple had been married for over 20 years already, raised three children almost completely, and then, whoopsie, here comes two more babies, Ruby, or Barbara as we know her now, and her older brother Malcolm. Either way, Ruby and Malcolm were loved and had a good first few years of life with their family. And surprise, another baby was on the way. It was almost like the little ones had a few moms because their older sisters loved to smother them with love and attention. I'm sure Mother Catherine loved having the extra help, too. If things could have just gone on this way, everything would have been almost perfect. Unfortunately, though, that is not the case. When little Ruby was 4 years old, she was out running errands with her expecting Mother Catherine and her older brother Malcolm. Getting around by streetcar, they encountered an intoxicated man who kicked Catherine in the belly and she was knocked out of the streetcar. She didn't appear to be too badly injured, so she took her children home after the incident. Now, if something like this happened today, an expecting mother would immediately go to the ER to make sure the baby was okay. However, things were handled a little differently in the early 1900s. By the time they arrived home, it was clear Catherine was not okay. She had begun bleeding, so a doctor was called to the home. It turned out the incident had resulted in a miscarriage. Even worse, 40-year-old Catherine developed a terrible infection and died a few days later. This was catastrophic for the family. Ruby's dad, Byron, an unstable alcoholic, wasn't strong enough to hold it together for his family. A couple weeks after his wife's sudden death, Byron dropped Ruby and Malcolm off at one of his older daughter's homes, saying he was off to find work out of town. Nobody in the family ever saw him again. Any chance of a healthy childhood for little Ruby and her brother seemed impossible now. Their older sisters did care for them for a while, but they were married and had children of their own, so it was difficult to add two other children to their homes, especially considering the trauma of losing their mother and being abandoned by their father had left them with some serious emotional difficulties that, of course, presented itself in their behavior. I am a preschool teacher, and hearing stories like this makes me want to go back in time and help those poor little children. They needed a lot of support and love, and there just wasn't anyone able to give it to them. It's just really sad. Ultimately, after being passed around for a while, Ruby and her brother Malcolm became orphans. Initially, they were able to be placed together in a foster home. Not a loving foster home, but they at least got the essentials like food, shelter, and schooling. In school, however, they were often teased for being awkward socially, which how could they not be with the traumatic history that they had, and for being orphans. They were constantly fighting to keep going and to get through, both at their foster homes and at school. Stanwyck later recalled of her childhood, quote, "When you live like that, you always take care of yourself first, because there's no one else to do it," end quote. Oh, this story just breaks my heart. Sadly, it gets worse for little Ruby, though. When Malcolm was a young teenager, it was decided he should be done being a child and get to work. So he was ripped away from his sister so he could learn a trade and get into the workforce. This devastated Ruby, Her brother had been her only true feeling of home, the only family she could count on being there, her only friend. And now he was gone and she was all alone. She recounts hardening after that because she simply couldn't handle the intense grief and sadness anymore. A part of her emotional self died when her brother left. Luckily, it seems Ruby's older sisters were somewhat still in her life. One of her sisters was an aspiring actress and brought Ruby on tour with her, and they also saw a couple of silent films together. Ruby was mesmerized by the idea of going on stage or being in a movie where she could leave herself and her trauma behind and become someone completely different. She also became an avid reader, anything to escape her reality. And these movies and books gave her hope and strength for her own destiny. Actor Robert Wagner would later say of her, quote, "Occasionally, on screen, Barbara had a wary, watchful quality about her that I've noticed in other people who had bad childhoods. They tend to keep an eye on life because they don't know if it can be trusted. I think her early life was one of the reasons she had such authenticity as an actress and as a person," end quote. Ruby is still Ruby, but I'm going to begin calling her Barbara now because we are at a transition point in her life. At 14 years old, it was time for Barbara to become an adult and begin working. Shortly after, she became pregnant. The details of this are unclear, but she had a botched abortion, which unfortunately left her unable to conceive another child. Like we talked about with Tallulah Bankhead, this would haunt her for the rest of her life, not being able to have a biological child. Barbara had a few menial, low-paying jobs in those early teenage years, but her heart and mind were filled with dreams of becoming an actress. She later said of her show business goals, quote, "I just wanted to survive and eat and have a nice coat," end quote. Being trained in brain development, I think she was looking for more than this, like an emotional escape, but we'll just tuck that in with survival. Barbara went to every audition she was able to, and it finally paid off with a gig as a chorus girl in a nightclub at 15 years old. Shortly later, she landed a spot as a dancer with the infamous Ziegfeld Follies at the New Amsterdam Theater. This was an exciting but exhausting time for Barbara. She was sleeping during the day and working most of the night, and in between she was sneaking in another job of giving dance lessons at a local gay bar. I'm tired just thinking about it. I did read some other theories and rumors that could go along with this side job that she had, but I'm going to stick to the facts. In 1926, Barbara finally made it onto the stage with a real speaking part. If she was exhausted before, this was about to put her over the edge. All of the hard work paid off, though, because the play, The Noose, was a hit. It went on for almost 200 performances, and somewhere along the way, during its run, Ruby Stevens became Barbara Stanwyck. The next year, she performed in a show called Burlesque on Broadway, and her star was rising. When Barbara was 20 years old, Hollywood took notice of the rising stage star and was interested in seeing what she could do on film. Her first screen test was for the 1927 silent film Broadway Nights, and she almost got the part. The thing that made her lose it was the fact that she couldn't cry on cue. She had spent her whole life toughening her exterior and holding back her tears deep within, and now she had to find those tears somehow. Although she didn't get a starring role, producer Bob Kane liked what he saw in her acting skills, and she was given a tiny part as a dancer. Things were looking up for Barbara Stanwyck, and boy, did she deserve some happiness and good fortune. However, more tragedy lurked around the corner. When Barbara was 21 years old, she fell in love and became engaged to a young man named Rex Cherryman. Before they could marry, though, Rex became sick and died. Barbara couldn't cope with yet another loss of someone she loved, so she immediately rebounded with a co-star from her play Burlesque, Frank Fay, and the two soon got married. I think Barbara was just looking for some kind of happiness and stability in her life. Barbara appeared in more movies at this time, bigger roles, but nothing very successful. Since she wasn't becoming an instant success, her new husband said she should just give it all up because she apparently wasn't going to make it as a film star. Now, I also read an account that said that she wanted to give it up and return to Broadway, but Frank Fay urged her to keep on going and even begged Frank Capra to give her a chance, so I'm not sure exactly which version is accurate. Either way, Barbara didn't throw in the towel on that Hollywood dream, and we can all thank her for that. However it played out, famed director Frank Capra saw her potential and cast her in his 1930 film, Ladies of Leisure. He found her to stand out from other actresses of the time. He said of her, quote, "Naive, unsophisticated, caring nothing about makeup, clothes, or hairdos. This chorus girl could grab your heart and tear it into pieces. She knew nothing about camera tricks, how to cheat her looks so her face could be seen, how to restrict her body movements in close shots. She just turned it on, and everything else on stage stopped," end quote. Wow, what a complimentary thing to say. In a world when women were lining up as their unauthentic selves hoping to be seen, Barbara Stanwyck was the most seen there was, just by being her. Let's all take a lesson from that. Ladies of Leisure was a hit, and Barbara's performance was very well received. The world was beginning to take notice of her talents and unique presence. Soon she was starring opposite Clark Gable in 1931's Night Nurse. Barbara teamed up with Frank Capra again for 1931's The Miracle Woman and 1932's Forbidden. He was really starting to understand the mystique of Barbara Stanwyck now and was seeing qualities he had never seen in another actor before. He said that her first shot at a line was always the best. So if she rehearsed before a scene, the first rehearsal would always be better than the actual shot. So Frank Capra began rehearsing the rest of the cast without her, saving the best of Barbara Stanwyck for when the film was rolling. A couple of more films followed, and then in 1932, Barbara and her husband Frank decided to adopt a baby. In December of that year, they brought home a cuddly little 10-month-old baby boy named Anthony. Family life wasn't the picture-perfect dream they imagined, though. Both parents were too busy to spend any real quality time with baby Anthony, so they hired nannies to do the job for them. This kind of reminds me of her role as Elizabeth Lane in Christmas in Connecticut, how she has to try to pretend to be a mother but really has no idea how to handle a baby. By this time, Frank had become verbally and sometimes physically abusive, too. As Barbara's star rose, Frank was not getting much work, which led to some resentment. 3 years after bringing little Tony home, Barbara and Frank got divorced after some pretty tumultuous episodes. The next year, in 1936, Barbara found love again with His Brother's Wife co-star Robert Taylor. What Barbara went into with intentions of a more casual relationship, as in no running straight to the altar type of relationship, the gossip columns and studio execs had a different idea. Barbara and Robert did move in together, and this coupled with him being 4 years younger than her sent people into a frenzy. Oh, what a different world we live in now. Anyways, MGM's Louis B. Mayer pretty much forced the two to get married for good publicity. It was okay, though, because they were truly in love by this point. Robert Taylor is quoted as saying, quote, "Miss Stanwyck is not the sort of woman I'd have met in Nebraska," end quote. He loved the early excitement of this relationship. Okay, now we get to talk about my favorite Barbara Stanwyck movie, 1937's Stella Dallas. If you love old movies and haven't seen this movie, please do yourself a favor and watch it. Her character in the movie is just amazing, and the premise of the story will tug at your heartstrings. She plays an unconventional mother with some amazing costumes, I should add, who sacrifices everything for the happiness of her daughter, and she plays this part to perfection. And that perfection was shown through when she was nominated for her first Academy Award. In 1941, Barbara stepped out of her comfort zone to do a screwball comedy with Henry Fonda called The Lady Eve. It was a hit and ended up on the American Film Institute's list of the 100 funniest movies in film history. And that same year, she got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Her husband Robert was gone at this time, having enlisted in the Navy as a flight instructor during World War II, since he was an accomplished pilot. But she was doing her part at home for the war effort as an actress because movies helped lift spirits during the time. In 1944, Barbara Stanwyck made her most successful movie, Double Indemnity, earning her third Academy Award nomination for Best Actress. After that, she made quite a jump in the other direction with Christmas in Connecticut, which I had mentioned earlier. I watch this movie every Christmas season while I wrap presents. I just love her imperfect character in it. Although Barbara had seen considerable success in her professional life, her family life wasn't so successful. Her husband, Robert Taylor, had finally returned from the war, but her relationship with her son, now a teenager, was quite unhealthy. Barbara didn't have any positive experiences to draw from, so she really didn't know how to be a good mother. She often prioritized work over her child. His behavior had become bad enough as a result of all of this that she sent him to military school when he was 15. He came home for a visit a year later, but upon leaving the visit, Barbara had her assistant tell him to never come back and to forget that Barbara was his mother. He was alone and abandoned, just like she had been. I should stress that Barbara Stanwyck was beloved in the film industry and considered one of the kindest women in the business. She was not a cruel woman. I think what it comes down to is that she just didn't know how to love a child, and she had some deep psychological scarring that prevented her from working through it. So it was easiest just to abandon him. I didn't find a whole lot of his life, but it does appear that he got married and had a child very young, but never really had much success in life professionally. He passed away in 2006. By 1950, Barbara and Robert Taylor's marriage had crumbled. She was too devoted to her work, and he wanted more of a solid family life. Remember at the beginning of their marriage, almost 15 years earlier, when he loved the excitement of their relationship? Well, he had grown and wanted things to settle down a bit. But Barbara was happiest while she was busy working. Ultimately, the two divorced, and he would remain the great love of her life until her death. But that didn't stop her from having other romantic relationships with other men. She starred in Titanic with a young Robert Wagner in 1953, and soon sparks were flying between the two. Barbara was quite the cougar at 46, and Robert Wagner was 23. This kind of age difference was not acceptable in those days, so they had to keep their relationship a secret. Eventually, the strain of the special circumstances of the relationship led to its end after a few years, but Robert Wagner has always considered it one of the most rewarding and intense relationships of his life. The 1960s would bring a lot of cultural change to the country, and an aging actress from the 30s and 40s just wasn't being offered outstanding roles anymore. Barbara's last movie role, 1964's The Night Walker, brought her on set again with her ex-husband, Robert Taylor, much to Robert Taylor's current wife's displeasure. Barbara tried some television work in the early 60s, but nothing was really sticking, which she was just fine with. At 55, she was proud of her long career and didn't really have anything more to prove, but she didn't really know what else to do, so she continued to work anyways. Then along came the Western series, The Big Valley, which ended up being very successful. The series brought her 3 Emmy nominations and 1 win. The Big Valley was canceled in 1969, and that same year, her ex-husband, the love of her life, Robert Taylor, died from lung cancer at only 57 years old. These two life events led Barbara into a deep depression, and she wouldn't really work again for 10 years, aside from a few television guest appearances. Coming back out of the woodwork, Barbara experienced a terrifying event in 1981 when a masked intruder broke into her home in the middle of the night, attacked her, and locked her in a closet while he robbed her home. The assailant made off with $5,000 worth of jewelry and was never caught. This event, as you can imagine, took a huge toll on her already fragile mental health. The next year, in 1982, Barbara Stanwyck finally won an Oscar. It was an Academy Award for superlative creativity and unique contribution to the art of screen acting, so basically an honorary Oscar for lifetime achievement. A young John Travolta presented the statue to her and later said it was his ultimate Oscar moment. What a remarkable honor for Barbara Stanwyck. Following her Oscar win, Barbara starred in my mom's favorite miniseries, The Thornbirds. Shout out to you, Mom. Now, I know this was playing in the background of my childhood a few times on VHS while I played with my My Little Ponies or made amazing light bright artwork, but I don't remember it, so I'll have to watch it. My mom says it's amazing, though. She must not be the only one who thinks that, because it earned Barbara a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Miniseries or Movie, and a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress in a Series, Miniseries, or Television. She followed the success of the Thornbirds with some television guest appearances, including a few on Dynasty. Barbara officially retired from acting in 1986 at the age of 79 after a remarkable career in show business. Sadly, Barbara wouldn't have too many years to enjoy retirement. As a heavy smoker for most of her life, she had done severe damage to her body. On January 29, 1990, Barbara Stanwyck died as a result of congestive heart failure and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease at the age of 82, wearing the four-leaf clover necklace that Robert Wagner had given her all those years ago. A piece of the great love that could have been would always be a part of her. I would like to share some interesting facts I learned about Barbara Stanwyck during my research. Bullet point number one. As I said, Barbara was known for her kindness in the film industry. Marilyn Monroe worked with her in 1952 and said that she was the only person in Hollywood's older generation who was kind to her. Way to go, Barbara. Bullet point number two. Her brother also became an actor. He just wasn't quite as famous as her. Bullet point number three. Frank Sinatra's first wife, Nancy, was one of Barbara's best friends. Bullet point number four. This is hard to believe, but I read that Barbara began smoking at the age of 9 years old. Bullet point number five. It is said that the 1937 movie A Star is Born was inspired by Barbara Stanwyck and Frank Faye's relationship. Barbara shot to stardom while Frank descended into something worse. Bullet point number six. Her home was destroyed by a fire in 1985, just 4 years after the violent burglary in the same home. As she watched the firefighters battle the blaze, she said, quote, "I've been in things like this before, but I always got paid for it," end quote. Hey, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade, right? Bullet point number seven. She was the highest paid woman in the entire United States in 1944, making about $400,000. That adjusts to over $7 million today. That's amazing. That girl deserved it. Bullet point number eight. At the height of her success in the 40s, the name Barbara skyrocketed in newborn babies because of her. She was that awesome. In conclusion, Barbara Stanwyck was forced to jump many hurdles in her early life to achieve the fame she did. She was the most relatable woman on screen, making her beloved by all. Her diversity and her acting abilities made her amazing at everything from comedy to film noir. She was admirable, being able to show love and kindness to those around her after growing up without that kind of love and kindness. Even if she couldn't find the strength to give her all to her own child, she helped redefine women's roles in Hollywood and was a role model to many aspiring actresses. Thank you, Barbara Stanwyck, for showing us strength and endurance and for sharing your talents with us. And thank you all for listening. Please subscribe, rate, and review where you listen to your podcasts and follow the show on Facebook and Instagram. Until next time, Goldies. I got most of my information from a book titled Barbara Stanwyck, A Life from Beginning to End, part of the Hourly History series. You've probably noticed that I like that series. I also used information from a June 22, 1985 article from the Los Angeles Times, BarbaraStanwyck.com, Biography.com, and IMDb.